Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
What is up, plant people? Welcome back to the Plantthropology Podcast, the show where we dive into the lives, careers, and general awesomeness of some very cool plant people to figure out why they do what they do and what keeps them coming back for more. I'm Vikram Baligia, your host and your humble guide in this journey through the plant sciences. And as always, I'm so happy and so thrilled to be with you today. How's it going? You doing well? It's another solo episode, so sorry, I guess. I don't know. We are on part 4 of our Tree Talk series, and today we'll be talking about flowers and fruits. So what are the differences between a flowering tree and a fruit tree, and why should you maybe think about having one over the other? So normally I do all kinds of intro stuff, and I think I come up with weird random things to say, but we're just going to jump into it. So let's listen to some music, and let's hit it. Okay, so it's spring, and what that means here where I live in the west of Texas, the South Plains, the Southern High Plains, Lubbock, whatever, where I live, is that it's hot. It's already hot. It's all the hot. I think it's 92 Fahrenheit today. I don't know what that is in Celsius. As I'm talking about this, I'm going to look it up, and I will interject the Celsiusness of it here in just a second. I think it's supposed to be about 96 tomorrow, which is probably today if you're listening to the day that this comes out. By the way, if you're not a podcaster, if you don't do any kind of stuff like this, thinking about and talking about things in the future tense as the past tense or the current tense in tense, whatever, is tough. It can be a challenge. So 92 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way, is about 33.3 Celsius, 96 tomorrow will be 35 Celsius. And by the way, the day of my wedding on August 7th, 2010, it was the ripe, warm, sweltering temperature of 45 degrees Celsius. I live on the surface of the sun. But one of the things we grow here and that I grow personally are fruit trees. Fruit trees are great, and they're a meaningful addition to your landscape. And I wanted to talk about some of the differences, and this will be a fairly short episode today, but I wanted to talk about some of the differences between flowering trees and ornamental trees and fruit trees in the first part of this episode, and maybe some of the reasons why you might want to plant one or the other. And we'll take a quick break, and then I want to talk about some tips about how to best grow fruit trees. So why fruit trees? Why would we want to grow these things in our cities, in our landscapes, and in our lives? Because ornamentals are great, right? There is nothing wrong with an ornamental flowering tree. Lots of good options. We have some beautiful flowering crab apples around here, which are some of the prettiest trees you'll ever see. There are flowering cherries and flowering plums. One of my personal favorites actually is the peppermint peach, which has this cool like pink fuchsia, white two-toned flowers that are doubled or tripled usually, and they're really fascinating, really pretty trees. And in the industry, on roadways and as street trees and in people's yards, there are some benefits to having a purely flowering tree. One of those benefits in some ways is they don't really make a mess. Now, a purely flowering ornamental tree may be a bit of a misnomer because in some cases you do get some fruits, but they're typically small. They're typically not obtrusive in a lot of ways. And even if they drop on the sidewalk or in your garden, they're not too big of a deal to deal with, right? They do provide some forage for certain animals, squirrels, birds, things like that, even though they may not be super palatable to us. They still are great forage early season for pollinators. And there are some benefits. They smell good. They look good. They're not especially messy, and they may be really great in your landscape. So depending on your goals, there may be some benefits to it. Also, they're commonly used as street trees so that in public settings, you don't necessarily have to have someone come by and pick up fruit and clean up and things like that. There are some issues. We ended up with the Bradford pear, everyone's favorite terrible fish tree. And that came out of a desire not to grow, I guess, fruiting pears on public roadways, and we end up with the Callery pear and the Bradford pear and some other related ornamentals, and they're weak wooded. They smell bad. They fall apart. They're invasive, and they don't give you pears that you can eat. So there are some benefits maybe, but ultimately, I like having a tree with fruits on it. If I'm going to grow a fruit tree and I'm going to grow something that I'm going to call an apple or a peach or a plum, I would kind of like to get apples and peaches and plums and stuff like that from the trees that I'm growing. So one of the reasons that I think growing fruit trees in the landscape is really important and really a meaningful sort of great endeavor is that I'm a big fan of what I call and what is generally called the multi-purpose landscape. The multi-purpose landscape. Now, I want to define this just a little bit and talk about it for just a minute before we move on. So it's not a secret that we have limited space, right? In our urban centers, in our agricultural settings, anywhere else, we're not making more land. We have the land we have. If you've bought a property, you have the land you have, unless you're planning a hostile takeover of your neighbor's front yards, you're kind of stuck with the space that you have, right? So what do we do with that? How do we best prioritize the use of our space, our resources, and everything else? And if the way that you want to prioritize it is to just have ornamental value, I'm not passing a value judgment on that. That's fine. You do you. You do what you want. But also, in the amount of space that we have, what if we could get a little bit more out of it? What if we could use edible plant materials? So whether it's tomatoes or lettuce, or maybe use an edible variety of kale instead of an ornamental kale in the landscape. What if instead of planting that flowering crab apple, you planted a regular crab apple or another variety of apple or a peach tree or a plum tree? Because then we're using the resources anyway, right? We're watering our trees anyway. We're watering our plants. Well, what if per unit area, per square foot, per square meter, whatever, we're getting double the value? We get the aesthetics of it. We get the shelter and habitat and everything else for our pollinators and wildlife and different things like that. But also, for that same amount of input or a similar amount of input, we also get peaches or plums or apples or something that we can feed our families with. If you've got enough of them, you could take to a farmer's market, make a few dollars. There's really a lot of potential in the multi-purpose landscape. And at a macro sort of city level, I think this is important too. There are cities that don't really want to plant fruit trees along public rights of way. And I get it, right? It's sort of a pain and it's a little bit of work to clean that up off the sidewalk. But some cities like Tucson, Phoenix, a few others plant oranges and fruits and things in public rights of way so that people can like harvest them and eat those fruits and vegetables. And I find from a public health standpoint, access to things like this is important. So when you're walking around, you could grab an apple off a tree or an orange or something else and eat it as you go or take it home. I think it is better for a society when we provide more food and more opportunities for people to eat nutritious things. So there's a lot of benefits. There are some thoughts and considerations that I think we need to look at, and we'll do that right before the break, and then I'll talk about these in a little bit of specifics after here in a couple of minutes. But if you're planting a fruit tree, you're probably going to buy a grafted fruit tree. Almost all of the fruit trees that you buy from the store are grafted, and it's usually going to be a couple of years old, anywhere between 1 and 3 years old, and they graft them for a couple of reasons. They take advantage of stronger root stocks and better quality scion wood or fruit wood, and they graft them together, and you sort of get the best of both worlds. Also, it helps overcome some of the juvenility problems that we see with fruit trees. If you go out and you plant your peach pit, you let your peach tree grow, you're probably waiting 7 to 10 years to eat any peaches, which, if you're patient, is totally fine. But if you take a grafted cutting, if you take a cutting from a parent plant that's already fruiting and graft it onto a rootstock and stick it out in the landscape and grow it that way, you're really looking at more like 2 to 3 years before you start seeing your first fruits. It gets you past some of that juvenility period, okay? And then long term, at about year 3 to year 5, you're really going to get into heavy production. So yes, you have to wait a little bit, but not as long as you may have to with a non-grafted or seed-grown, we call it own-root or on-root tree, okay? So there's some benefits to that for sure. And again, pretty much anything you buy from a garden center or a distributor is going to be grafted. There are some potential disease issues that we deal with. And while it's true that our ornamental varieties will also deal with these disease issues, we're going to deal with it more in a lot of our fruiting varieties. They are selected for more of maybe the fruit quality, the fruit size, the overall whatever of the plant, and not as much for the disease resistance. So we'll have to deal with pests. We'll have to deal with fungal problems and viruses and all kinds of other things. So there are some pest control considerations there. And if you have like fruits dropping on the ground and they're not getting harvested or cleaned up, you're going to end up with things like gnats or fruit flies. I can't say the fruit flies that will end up around your property and other things. And they're doing their job. They're cycling nutrients, but they can be a nuisance. So we have to deal with some of those issues. There can also be a mess to clean up. And I know that that seems kind of silly because, again, we're trying to get fruits and vegetables and we're probably going to harvest most of it. But some stuff's going to hit the ground. If you've ever stepped on like a hot, warm, old peach, that is a smell you will not forget. So there is some cleanup consideration. And if it's along a sidewalk, if it's on a, again, a public right of way, in your front yard, over your car, there are some things you have to think about there. So placement matters of where we put these trees. There's some other things to think about too. They do require more fertility, more water, things like that. But all of these problems are solvable. And if we're using our resources and being efficient with our resources, they don't actually end up being problems at all. They are opportunities. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to tell you a couple things about our sponsors and what's coming up for the show and some other cool stuff. And then when we come back, I'm going to talk through some of the specifics of how to deal with some of these concerns we just addressed. Well, hey there. Welcome to the mid-roll, friends. I'm glad you're here again. I'm always, again, happy because you've made it this far in the episode. So, a few things. Connect with Planthropology. We're all the places. If you get on the interwebs and search for planthropologypod.com, or don't search for it, just put it in your thing, the thingamadoodle. What is that called? Address bar. Put it in your address bar. It'll take you to the website. If you get on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and search for Planthropology, you'll find me. It's the green background with the bristlecone pine. That'll be me. The usernames vary because people beat me to some stuff, and that was very sad for me. I'm also on the TikTok machine. I am creeping up on 30,000 followers, which is just bonkers. So if you like TikTok, go follow me on TikTok. Tell a friend about the TikTok. I am at the Plant Prof there. If you're on Facebook, also join the Planthropology's Cool Plant People Facebook group. It's all the P's, so many P's. And we post memes, I post episodes, we discuss plant things. I'm not as active on there as I used to be because I'm not as active on Facebook as I used to be, but it's fine. Thanks so much to our sponsors. First and foremost, the Texas Tech Department of Plant and Soil Science for letting me do the thing, and to Dr. Richie for being so supportive of it. I told him that we recently passed 100,000 downloads. Oh, hey, by the way, we recently passed 100,000 downloads, and that's bizarre and wild to me. So crazy. And he was super excited, and we're going to talk about some other things we can try and do surrounding podcasts in the show. Thanks to Forest Proud for sponsoring the show for the next couple of months, at least. Forest Proud is a nonprofit organization focusing on connecting the industry, academia, research, implementation, the public, and everyone and anyone in between, and discussing forest-based climate solution. Trees are one of our tools to fighting climate change. If you head over to forestproud.org and check out all of the cool stuff on their website, if you end up on the shop, which I think you should, and use the promo code Planthropology at checkout if you're looking for stickers or t-shirts or sweatshirts or any other cool stuff, you'll get 10% off your order. Again, that's forestproud.org/shop. Use the promo code Planthropology at checkout for 10% off your order. Also, let's talk about Podchaser. Podchaser is like the IMDb of podcasts. You can find information on who works on what show, and if you need someone to blame for something, you can find out how to do that on there too. But you can leave ratings and reviews. And for the month of April, Podchaser is doing their Reviews for Good campaign. This year, Reviews for Good goes to support World Central Kitchen, which helps feed Ukrainian refugees. Every review you leave on Podchaser for any show, whether it's a whole show as a whole or an episode, donates 25 cents towards World Central Kitchen. If you leave a review for Planthropology, you'll actually donate $1 because I'm going to be matching that. My network, the Podfix Network, which, by the way, go check out the Podfix Network, is matching that. And Buzzsprout, my hosting service, is also matching that. So every review you leave for an episode of Planthropology or the show as a whole donates a dollar to World Central Kitchen. And I think that's pretty darn cool. So let's listen to music for like 2 seconds. I love elevator music. And then let's talk about fruit trees more. Okie dokie. Hey, we're back. Cool. Cool beans. So we talked before the break about some potential issues that we may see and want to deal with or have to deal with. There's someone staring at me through the window of my office, and it's Emily. Aw, she drew a heart on my window and says, I love you. That's very sweet, Emily. And this is ending up in the show, by the way. She can't hear me, I don't think, but I'm going to send it to her later. Anyway, so we are talking about fruit trees and some of the concerns and things that go with it. We discussed that before the break. But let's talk about solutions, because there is a solution to every problem. So these are also tips and things that you should be doing for your fruit trees at this time of year. And by the way, I don't know when you're listening to this, but it is April 20th in the year of our Lord 2022 as I record this. Okay, water. Water your fruit trees. Water your other trees. Water your landscapes. Your plants need more water than you think they do. And they need it in a different way than you think they do. So if you're going out and watering your ground, your grass, your plants for like 2 minutes a day every morning, you're like, hey, this is enough. You're doing it wrong. Water deeply and infrequently. Soil dries from the top down. And if you water every day, you're only saturating the top couple of inches of soil profile. So all the roots of your plants will hang out up there because they don't have to work very hard. If you water deeply and heavily, it pushes water down through the soil profile. So as it dries from the top down, it actually pushes your roots deeper into the soil, chasing that water that's deeper. So then if you end up with drought conditions and you can't water, it doesn't rain, whatever, for a while, the top 2 or 3 inches of soil dry out, doesn't matter. Your roots are deeper than that, and there's probably still some moisture down there. Water deeply and water infrequently. Once a week is good. You know, for a couple hours, you want to put a couple of inches down. If you can, follow your ordinances. Don't, you know, break the law. But use drip line if you can. Use soaker hoses, those kinds of things to irrigate your trees. You also want to water at the drip line. So if you think of your tree like an umbrella, the outside of that canopy is what we call the drip line. It's where water would drip off of your umbrella. Most of the feeder roots that pull up water are out there. Don't stick the hose right up against the trunk. There's no feeder roots there. It's not doing you any good. And in fact, it can lead to more disease problems and different things. So water either at the drip line or between the edge of the trunk and the drip line. So you're actually going to put the water where the roots are that need it. If your tree is really filling the fruit, right? If it really has a lot of fruit set, as it develops, as it goes through the season, it's going to need a lot of water. In my peach orchard, we'll start watering about now and probably not ultimately stop until the peaches are done, right? Till our season's over. And one of the reasons for that is I can't water the whole orchard at once, so I cycle through. So I'll water like 3 rows of trees and for, you know, overnight or however long I need to. And then I'll move on to the next one and the next one, and I'll do them by groups of threes. By the time I'm done, it's been 5 to 7 days and I can move back to the beginning. So they need water. They need consistent water. It depends on the crop you're growing and it depends on the type of fruit you have. You can find all this information online. But you want to make sure that you are consistently applying the amount of water to that tree that tree needs, okay? So don't think, I watered this week. I probably don't have to next week. You want consistent filling of those fruits as they're developing. So you don't have to water a ton, right? If you need less water or if it rains, that accounts for a watering. So if you, say, put an inch of water down 1 week, the next week you get an inch of rain, yeah, go ahead and skip that week. But then the week after, you probably need to think about putting water down again. Make sure that your soil stays moist, bleh, and well saturated down through a few, you know, a foot or two of soil if possible, without staying like soggy. You want to allow drying time between irrigations to move water down through that soil profile. So water. Fertilize. If you haven't fertilized yet, you probably should. The best time to fertilize your fruit trees is just before bud break, really as they start to push blooms and as the leaves are setting. That is the right time to apply a balanced fertilizer. You can either broadcast it on the surface. You can liquid fertilize, or deep root feeding is really the best way to do it, but that can be challenging for a lot of reasons. But you want to put down a balanced fertilizer. You may hear people tell you that, oh, I need a bloom booster and I need a 0-30. Just put a balanced fertilizer down, right? Unless you are severely deficient in something like phosphorus and potassium, which, by the way, if you're reading a bag of fertilizers, there's three numbers on it. The first one is nitrogen, the second one is phosphorus, the third one is potassium. Okay. Get a soil test, send it away, figure out what you need. I'm going to pretty much guarantee you're always going to need nitrogen. That's what a lot of your plants feed most heavily on. If you see a leaf, you see something green, think nitrogen. But the other two are often not as limiting. So get a soil test, figure out what you need, and fertilize appropriately based on what your plants and what your soil needs. So at this time of year, it's a good time to put down a balanced fertilizer at whatever rate your soil test tells you you need to make up for the deficit for that specific crop. And then maybe think about doing it again in the fall to really feed the roots, make sure that there's fertility necessary, or the fertility that is there is necessary for as that plant starts to grow through the winter. It doesn't put on leaves, but it's still going to grow roots and do some other things. It still needs a little bit of fertility, and it'll be banked a little bit as you go into the winter and for the following spring. Mulch. Should you mulch? Yes, you should mulch. Don't make mulch volcanoes. Don't pile mulch up on the trunk, but a thin layer of mulch around the base of your fruit tree, maybe halfway out. If you can do the whole drip line, great. If you can, you know, mulch under the whole canopy, perfect. If you can get even a couple of feet out, it's better than nothing. Helps suppress weeds, helps retain moisture, and really keeps the soil cool in the summer, warm in the winter. Again, don't pile it up on the trunk. That can trap moisture up against the trunk, be a place where diseases and insects can get in. It can be cover for insects and diseases that are going to overwinter or grow in on the ground around your tree. But overall, mulch is a very good thing. Pruning. Should you be pruning your fruit trees now? Probably not. Probably not. Most fruit trees, and not all fruit trees, but most fruit trees fruit on last year's wood. Wood that sort of developed through the fall and set buds. So they're old buds. You can tell this because they bloom in the spring, right? That tree has not had a chance to grow new wood to put buds on. So things like crepe myrtles that bloom in the summer or fall, they bloom on new wood. So you can cut those back right now to... Actually, I'm not going to tell you to do that. Don't crepe murder, right? Go out and you can prune it like you would prune any other tree. But you can trim it back to main trunks and main stems and things like that. It puts out new growth and it flowers on that new growth. Most of your fruit trees are not that way. Maybe some of the fall crops and fall fruiting varieties or fall blooming varieties, but that's not very many of them. So don't prune until after they're done for the season, because otherwise you'll be cutting off bud wood and fruit wood. If you wait till pretty much when the fruits are done, you can do a summer pruning. Sometimes that helps slow down the growth of the tree so you don't get this big tree that's harder to harvest. And you know what has fruited and what's done. You can also prune late summer, early fall, and then it'll grow new budwood through the fall and the winter. It at least sets the budwood through the fall and the winter. Starts to elongate and stretch out in the spring, the buds set, and then you'll get flowering and fruiting in the spring. Okay, so I would wait for pruning until after they're done. The exceptions to that are if there are a whole bunch of branches that cross in the middle of the tree, so they're going to rub and cause damage and remove bark and things like that, places where disease and issues can get in. You can prune that out. You can prune for overall structure. You can prune for the overall health of the tree, or if there are broken branches or dead branches or some that are going to cause a hazard in some way, yeah, go ahead and get rid of those. That's totally fine. But in general, you do not want to prune until after that fruit tree is done. Okay, this is not a hard and fast rule. There are some exceptions to that. But in temperate climates, warm climates where those trees go fully dormant, they're mostly and generally going to fruit on last year's wood. Okay, so keep that chainsaw, keep your pruning saw in the shed until after your trees are done flowering. If you need to clean them up after that, you can, but just understand that you're going to be cutting off potential fruits. Pest control is a big thing. How do we deal with pests? Now, pests we can define as insects, birds, rodents, the neighbor's kids, fungi, whatever else. How do we get rid of them? How do we keep them off of our plants and off of our fruit? In general, we're just going to have to come to terms with the fact that we're going to lose some fruit to quote-unquote pests because other things eat fruit too. And if you can tolerate a little bit of yield loss, okay, cool. I think we should. I think the birds should get some. I think the neighbor's kids should get some. But if you're worried about fungi or fungal diseases, now is it's almost a little late, but you could still go out with a broad-spectrum fungicide, apply them to your trees, and take care of some of your fungal problems before they really get going. A lot of fungi are going to attack the leaves and the young fruit and the new stems before they harden off through the year, and then those problems will continue to develop throughout the year. Really, the best time to apply a fungicide is right at or right before bud break, right before those flower buds open. You can catch it early, get rid of some of those spores and those fruiting bodies, and you're okay. Same thing is true with insecticides. Now, I know a lot of us don't like to spray insecticides, especially on our fruits, and we spray as little as possible. But if you're starting to see infestations of like wood boring insects or fruit boring insects and different things like that, they're going to cause damage to your plant. They're going to make the fruit maybe inedible. Definitely in a lot of cases, they make the fruit where we can't sell it because who wants to buy a fruit with a worm in it, right? So if you have to spray an insecticide, follow the label. Any insecticide you use, any pesticide you use, follow the label. That is your contract with the government and with the company that made that insecticide. And this is true for organic insecticides or pesticides or conventional insecticides or pesticides. It doesn't matter. Follow the label. It is the law, okay? Do the thing. Apply it appropriately. Wear the right protective equipment or hire someone who's insured and knows what they're doing to come do it for you, okay? So another way you can deal with pests, if they're small enough to squish them, you can get pheromone traps that will, you can hang out in the orchard. It'll attract the insects. They get stuck in there and they die. Sometimes there are mating disruptors that are essentially just like you hang them up, they're little pheromone traps. It puts stuff in the air and the insects can't signal well enough to mate. And so you may get one population, but you won't get the next population, right? They don't reproduce. You can clean up leaf litter and things around the base of your plant. Don't leave a whole lot of stuff over winter. That's where insects can hide. You can pull it all up. You know, if you've got peach pits on the ground or old peaches and leaves, rake them up, throw them in your compost pile. The heat will kill anything in there and it won't be right there at the base of your trees where it can get pulled up. So pest control is definitely going to be a concern. And again, if you let fruit hit the ground and rot, it's going to get worse. Do not do that thing. Finally, harvest. When do you harvest your fruit? Well, the best thing about having a fruit tree in your backyard is you can let it get like completely ripe, right? Trees spend a lot of energy turning sunlight into sugar and water and all these things. And so the longer it hangs on the tree, generally the sweeter it's going to get as the plant concentrates more carbohydrates in there, as it pulls up more nutrients and deposits them in the fruit. In general, it's becoming more enticing to something that's going to spread that seed. Hey, that's you. You're the thing that's going to spread the seed. Good for you. Congratulations. So wait till it's pretty much ripe. Depending on the fruit, you may be able to shelf it for a couple of days or a week or 2 weeks. If you're worried about shelf life, if you're worried about storing it for a little longer, you can even harvest it, depending on the crop, a little bit green and let it ripen on the counter. Things like apples and peaches and a few others do really well. They'll ripen on the counter. Some of them will not. So do a little research based on what you have. See if they'll ripen off the tree, and then you can harvest them a little bit early if you need to, because they'll ripen off the tree. They still release ethylene gas. They still go through this whole process. You may sacrifice a little bit of sugar content, but they'll last a lot longer. So what questions do we have? What do you want to know about fruit trees? That's kind of all I had planned, and I know you can't tell me right now, but our monthly Q&A is coming up next week, which will be the last week of April. So the April Q&A is coming out. So if you're listening to this like as it drops or the week that it comes out, email me at plantanthropologypod@gmail.com. Send me your questions. Send me your thoughts. I would love to answer some more fruit tree questions or address some of your comments. So lots of fun stuff coming up. There should be a lot of fun interviews in May. The biologists and botanists are taking over. So I can't wait for you to hear from some more botanists, some here at the university, some in different places, and lots more fun coming up later through the spring and the summer. But yeah, send me your questions. Go plant some fruit trees. Y'all keep being kind. And if you haven't been kind so far, maybe give that a try. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of this. You know I love you, folks. And we will talk next week.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.